Thanks for listening to the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday, 3 to 6 Eastern, 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Boom! What up, America? Doug Gottlieb Show. Fox Sports Radio. What a game last night. What a game. And there's a lot of other stuff to talk about. Baseball players stripping down, frustrated at TSA, checking them every time they try and pitch. Of course, we get ready for Milwaukee and Atlanta. We'll play for the sound for you at some point. Can we play first fake sound? Did you guys hear that? What Molly Karam said and what they were making fun of Stephen A. for having to travel to Milwaukee for a series. And Molly Karam, who as friendly, nice lady, I've known her for a long time. And so what you have to do is you have to, and we do got to do this in sports as well. Like, good people can say dumb things. Smart people can say dumb things. Good players can make dumb plays. And she said that Milwaukee's a terrible city. And that it was an all-timer. It wasn't just that you're talking about a city that's actually a great summer city. Like Milwaukee, Chicago. Chicago's an unbelievable summer city. The weather isn't actually as nice in Chicago as it is in Milwaukee. Minneapolis. Northern Midwest is big time. So is New England in the summer. There's a reason that people still live there when the weather's terrible in the winter. Because the summer is pretty epic, right? Like anybody who lives in Michigan will tell you, you go to the lake anywhere in Michigan in the summer and it's pretty obscenely nice. But that's not the part that just strikes me as stupid and arrogant to say. It was also uttered, and the stops on the way there. All right, let me just state what the rest of us know. Like, look, Atlanta has fun culture. Terrible summer city. It is humid and gross. Milwaukee, awesome summer city. But like the worst part about Molly Karam's, I guess, take and this has nothing to do with her being a woman. Her role as host is to not give opinion, right? So she's giving opinion on something. And by the way, you know, Stephen A's trying to make a hot take on picking teams and whatever. Giving opinion, and then she's like, yeah, the worst part is the stops on the plane. First of all, there are nonstops into Milwaukee. Second of all, if you know anything about Milwaukee, you could actually fly into Chicago rather easily, and you'll get a car service. Third of all, like, dude, you're flying first class. Shut up. What are you doing? God, people say dumb things. They also say dumb things about games, right? The end of the game last night was amazing. Amazing on a multitude of levels. I think with 9 seconds to go is where you can start. There's a lot more that goes into the game where the Suns were probably the better team and the Clippers tried to steal one late, but they did. There was a deflection. And the Clippers got the ball back. A timeout was called. They throw the ball into Paul George. He promptly misses two free throws. Now, Paul George, 26, 6 and 6. 5 of 10 from the free throw line, so he was 5 of 8, but he did score 9 points in the final 2:41, including the go-ahead buckets in the final 30 seconds, but then, of course, missed two free throws. They're up 1, 8-point-whatever seconds to go. So, of course, after missed free throws, let's start with the missed free throws. Do people understand that you can miss and not choke? Do people understand that? Now, I understand that Paul George has a little bit of a history of making some boneheaded plays and struggling with the tension and pressure and probably has choked in the past in the playoffs. But if you watch those two free throws, those are not choked free throws. The first one is around and out. It's you never want to miss, but that is called a good miss. And the second one, he hit the heel of the rim. That was just long, which... usually choking is when you leave it dead short. So the Suns get the basketball back. They call a timeout. They throw it in to Devin Booker. And it was what Ty Lue did was really smart. They doubled Devin Booker on the first bounce to get the ball out of his hands. The ball ends up going to the corner, and a three-pointer is taken. And that's where things kind of get crazy. The first rule is when a three is taken in one corner, 74% of the time, it comes off to the opposite direction. So you have to box out, even though it's pushing and shoving in your back, and you have to know the ball is coming there. I think it was Terrence Mann, who didn't have a good enough box out, got pushed in the back a little bit, and then he got caught kind of swiping the ball out of bounds, and it might have gone off DeAndre, and we never saw the replay. Anyway, so with 0.8 seconds to go, instead of there being a timeout because Phoenix didn't have one, we have a review. The review becomes a de facto timeout. This is going to be a topic during the show. How do we fix the replay stuff? This is how the game ended.
Crowder waiting with it. Lobs it underneath.
Yes! It's good. DeAndre Ayton scores the basket over the rim and in. DeAndre Ayton put it over the rim and in.
This is DeAndre Ayton on the final play.
Once I set that first screen for Cam, I tried to set up Zubac to, you know, for Book to have a good angle on him. And I believe once my feet touch the paint where I can go off right, left, 1-2, not many people are going to be up there with me. So that's where I got confident at. Once I really got that gathered, nobody bumped me or, you know, it was up. And, you know, that was it.
This is Paul George after the game.
I mean, I'm not going to put too much on that. Obviously, it was a, you know, opportunity that was missed. I'm always confident at the free throw line. I've always been very successful in clutch moments at the free throw line. Tonight, I was just unsuccessful, extended the lead. So I'm not going to put too much on that. We still were in position to win the ball game late in the game. If I know this team correctly, the fight we have, you know, going into game three and the fight that we have to believe that, you know, we're going to change the series. That's who we've been and that's who we are. And so I'm very confident in our group. And, you know, fact of the matter is they did what they were supposed to. They won their two games on their floor. We got to go home and protect our house.
That's Paul George after the game. I tend to agree with him. Like, he didn't shoot him badly, but you can't miss them both. And you can't miss them both when you're the guy who goes and demands the basketball. Right? Like, if you happen to get caught with the basketball and get fouled and you miss two, that's one thing. But when you call a timeout, you set up an inbounds play, and you're the first option because you're an 80s. You can't go 0-2. Can't do it. So he didn't choke, but he did miss, and they're inopportune misses. Who's to blame for giving up the alley-oop? And my argument would be probably three or four people. I put it on Ty Lue because they should have been switching there. As DeAndre Ayton said, nobody bumped him because there were no switches. Look, Ayton did grab the jersey of Zubac and kind of throw him right into the body of Devin Booker, which is a brilliant move. I mean, I guess by technical definition, it could be fouled. That has never been called a foul ever in my lifetime. So if you're Zubac, you have to not lose contact. No matter if he grabs your jersey or not, you have to not be body to body. He cannot cut to the basket. DeMarcus Cousins, I don't think should have been in that game because he didn't do much in terms of pressuring the ball. He didn't take away the basket. You're supposed to take away the basket for the first 3 seconds. You jump up and down as much as you can, go crazy. 1, 2, 3, and then you can cover the corner because at the last second, that's when guys like a Devin Booker would have come up in the corner and shot the basketball. But some of this is also on Ty Lue not switching everything. And the personnel was bad. And the play was amazing. And the pass was even better, as was the catch. Dan Beyer, what did you think of the end of that game?
Wow. I mean, it took a long, long time. I will say this. I thought that it was very good of the broadcast team to clarify the goaltending rules, because I think that's what most people thought initially, that, oh, that's goaltending. The ball was in the cylinder. So I thought it was a great job by the TV crew of Jeff Van Gundy and and Mark Jackson and Mike Breen to say that, but
that's the play. That's the play that Phoenix. That most people learned that rule. I think it was like 3 years ago when the Suns ran an out of bounds play in a regular season game and threw it right kind of to the rim and got a tip in dunk. I think it was for Tyson Chandler, and that was the first time that most of America who watches basketball all the time watched it. And I had learned that rule. I thought that was the case. And that was, in fact, the case. And so when I saw it, I was like, well, that's ball game.
Yeah.
I didn't know what people were even yelling about.
Like, you know, I understand you're worried about Devin Booker, you know, catch and shoot in .8. That maybe that would be your worry. To allow that pass to happen is just...
Well, the weak side guy should have been in help as well, because you physically can't make that pass to the weak side corner. So there's one other, I don't know, it was Patrick Beverly. Like, they should have bumped him. He shouldn't have had a free run to the basket, and there should have been a switch.
Yeah. And it was Booker,
Nick,
the
Nick
one.
Batum, yeah.
Booker is the one that set the pick on Zubats, too, I believe. So that was going to be their play. So here I'm thinking the Clippers are all worried about Booker, and Booker's
well,
the
no,
one.
Well, no, if they would have switched, then Booker would have popped out. And he would have had a big guy on him, right? Which normally you don't want, but again, with 0.8 seconds to go, a big hand, you know, in your face. But that was that play. The play is, you know, if they don't switch, you throw it to the rim. If they do switch, you hit Booker, or Booker could have back cut for a little lob himself.
Yeah, Zubac was late, and he just didn't get off his feet.
Well, what happened was he was. They had Ayton first set one screen, which kind of opened up Zubac a little bit, and then he was late. And then if you watch, he grabbed Zubac's jersey and threw him into Booker, and that's when a switch should have occurred. Anyway, great basket. It was a great game.
Yeah, great pass.
Great pass, good basketball, close game, missed free throws, unbelievable crowd. Like, it was really exciting. It's easier when you don't have a dog in the hunt, although I do have the Clippers getting to the finals. But it is easier to just go, hey, that was really good basketball.
I will say this. I think the silver lining, if you're a Clippers fan, they probably shouldn't have won the game anyway. It wasn't like they led throughout, and then that was the one that ended in the Suns. I felt that the Suns were the better team last night. So maybe there's that silver lining. Like if you thought that you had one, you know, like the Sixers did against the Hawks or the Bucks did against the Nets in game five, maybe that one stings a little bit more, but I don't know if I ever thought that the Clippers had that game. I thought they were on the verge of stealing it, and then they just didn't steal it.
You have the ball with 8 seconds to go and a one-point lead. The game should at least go to overtime. That would be my take. Right? So did they have it won? No. But in the NBA, the competency you usually see at the free throw line, they should have made two free throws and then figured out a way to foul to win the game, and if they didn't foul, worst case scenario, you give up a 3-point shot. Yes, John Ramos.
Really quickly, that 3-pointer that was taken that went the long off the rim, would you consider that a shot that you would want your player to take if he's open? Or I thought that was a horrible play with you're down by 1 point and is that what you want? Do you want the guy to take a 3-point shot with like 8 seconds left to go if he's wide open, or would you rather try to be more like drive to the basket and get 2 points? Because they're down by 1 point.
Wait, who? What? Which? Which?
It
which
was
play?
The last. It was the one that they passed in to Devin Booker, and he passed it to the corner, and the guy took the 3-point shot. They were down by. I don't know who.
Just prior to the ball being knocked out of bounds.
That's what's his name? The kid from Villanova who was open in the corner.
Yeah. Would you want your player to do? Like, I thought that was a horrible shot when you're down by a point, and like that was. I couldn't believe that was a play you drew up.
Well, that wasn't the play they drew up. What happened was the Clippers double teamed Devin Booker, and he was kind of stuck on the sideline, and they made the one extra pass to the open man. I would say, is that the play, the shot that you want? I mean, that is a shot that you have to be able to shoot to play in the NBA.
Okay.
Right? That is one of the most practiced shots in the NBA, period, stop. So it's the shot that the defense gave you, and it was an open shot. I didn't think he should have kicked out his leg. I thought that kind of distracted him. But, I mean, you're not going to be able. Miles Bridges was only 1 of 5, or whatever. But He was left open. Jay Crowder made the, what really should have happened was when they doubled Jay Crowder, if Jay Crowder cuts, now all of a sudden, I'm trying to think who rotated there, but I still think that Bridges would have been open because you would have cut with Jay Crowder, but Crowder smartly made the extra pass. I mean, think about it. Jay Crowder only scored 2 points, you know, one steal, couple rebounds, didn't make a shot, didn't make a 3-point shot, but that pass to Miles Bridges and the obviously the alley-oop, excuse me, Mikhail Bridges open in the corner. So to answer your question, like, is that the play you got drawn up? No, but the Clippers took him out of the play that they got drawn up because they double-teamed the basketball. And when you get in a scramble situation, an open corner three is not a bad shot. Is that better?
Yes, that makes 100%. Yes, thank you.
You know, at some point, you got to take what the defense gives you. You know, it's a lot like what that last play was, where Dan Byers like, hey, I thought they were going to run something for Devin Booker. And again, this is one of the things in basketball that drives me crazy is there are some teams that the only thing they do for shooters is run them off screens. Whereas the best thing to do for a shooter is make them a screener, because now you put the defense in that conundrum. Do I stay with the shooter and leave the cutter, or do I bump the cutter and leave the shooter? Because if they would have left DeAndre Ayton to guard it, Devin Booker would have popped out and possibly been wide open for a jump shot. That's the design of the play.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
So the Celtics hired Ime Udoka, who we're like same gen. He's a Portland dude, high school in Portland, transferred back to play for Portland State. And then total grinder, like made it through the back when it was the D League, made it to the league, then bounced all around overseas, back here, played in the NBA, never played a full season, but basically made the Spurs. Had great relationships with LaMarcus Aldridge. Remember when LaMarcus Aldridge signed with San Antonio? Like there was a lot of people thought that it was their relationship that he was able to convince LaMarcus Aldridge to sign with San Antonio. And then he went from playing right to being part of the Spurs system. He's been an assistant with the Sixers, and then, of course, this year with the Nets. So he's head coach, and there's a report out that Brad Stevens talked to Jaylen Brown, talked to Jason Tatum, and they were both totally on board. It was one of the guys that they wanted, and he had worked under Brad Stevens when Brad was coach with USA Basketball. So, like, all of that makes sense, but this is the big thing. I'm just telling you, this hiring cycle is going to be about the Ime Udokas, the guys who have played in the league that can relate to current players in the league. That's just the players have spoken. And this is very much a players' league. Now, look, there does come a point where you're going to have to at some point be the bad guy. But I really feel like this is what the league is going to and like it is going to and will look like in years to come. Right? So I mean I'm interested in so much of what's going to happen to some of these other jobs, right? Like David Vanderpool, I'm surprised he didn't get the Portland job. David Vanderpool has been an assistant in Portland for 7 years. What's interesting about the Portland thing is Damian Lillard was critical of the Minnesota Timberwolves when they didn't hire Vanderpool as the interim coach when Ryan Saunders was fired. Okay, so he stands up for his guy when he's in Minnesota. Now the job is open, and he hasn't said a word about David Vanderpool, who, by the way, was a great player overseas. Great. Italian league, Russian league, good player. And very good guy who's grinded through. He coached in Moscow. He coached in Portland. He coached in Minnesota. He's still the associate head coach. So I'm interested in these jobs. But the Ime Udoka, yeah, he can do it. He played for Pop and one of Pop's guys. And that is the signature organization. If you're good with that organization, you're going to be good in this league.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
I have a funny story for you. Can I share this really, really, really funny story?
Sure.
Before Steve Palazzolo joins us. So my first year at Oklahoma State, our starting center was Brett Robish. Brett's dad, Dave, played in the NBA. You may remember him with the... Went to play Kansas, played in the NBA with several teams. Anyway, so Brett's wife, he got married while we were in college. Brett's wife, Shanna, had transferred. They both transferred in and met each other during the year he was sitting out. He transferred from Illinois. She transferred in from Texas A&M. So one of his first road games was going to play Texas A&M. And she's like, wait, we had a basketball team? I swear to God. Oh, that's
it's very, very true.
Steve Palazzolo joins us, Pro Football Focus analyst. Steve, how are you?
Doing great. Thanks for having me back.
Absolutely. Did you watch last night's Suns Clippers game?
I did not. I'm behind on a lot of my NBA watching.
So, okay, bro, what are you watching? You watch you pouring over film, college film, pro film right now? Like, what are you guys doing at PFF?
There's just so much football on my mind. Yes, we're always preparing for next season, and I'm helping NFL teams, you know, prepare for the year. I got a lot going on that's mostly football related.
Okay, so help me out. Who do you think Tom Brady was talking about when this was Tom Brady? We have that cut there, Ramos. This was Tom. Tom Brady said. Basically, like, you're going to stick with that guy when a team backed away at the end of the deal. I mean, like, look, we came up with somebody mentioned Tennessee yesterday. Obviously, people think it's Chicago. I think it's San Francisco because San Francisco was the team that thought about it and then kind of backed away. And we all know how he feels about Jimmy Garoppolo. Who do you think the team he was talking about was?
I initially thought it was Chicago with Trubisky, and then that was before Foles, and then. I did Tennessee radio yesterday, and they said, what about the Titans? I was like, you know what? Actually, after Brady had seen many years of Ryan Tannehill with the Miami Dolphins and all that stuff, I think it actually might have been Tennessee, because I think that was the other. I know he wanted to go to San Francisco. I feel like if he said it about Garoppolo, it'd be kind of tongue-in-cheek and joking around. But with Tennessee, I could see him being serious, being like, really? You're going to take Tannehill after what I just saw? After we dominated the AFC East, and he was the quarterback there for 8 years? So I'm going to lean Tennessee if I was choosing.
The Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Tennessee is an interesting one. Speaking of Tennessee, what do you think their offense will look like with the addition of Julio Jones?
Oh, man, there's so much explosive potential. A lot of it depends on Julio bouncing back from injury and, you know, getting a little bit older. But if he's, you know, even 80% of what he's been, Julio Jones, the ability to win down the field is huge. A.J. Brown is like a younger version of Julio with the skill set that he brings to the table. And, of course, with Derrick Henry, too, you know, defenses truly have to pick what they're going to try to stop. You know, how are you going to stop those two receivers down the field? You know, are you going to put the extra man in the box to stop Derrick Henry? Ryan Tannehill, whether Brady was joking about him or not, Tannehill's played great football the last couple of years. He has elevated his game far beyond what he did at Miami. He had showed flashes with the Dolphins, but this last couple of years has been far more consistent with the Titans. So they really needed Julio too, because they, you know, Josh Reynolds was going to be their number two wide receiver. You know, he's really a three or a four option. So having those two freak wide receivers on the outside and Derrick Henry, you know, it's just going to be really difficult for defenses to slow this offense down.
Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Steve Palazzolo, Pro Football Focus, joining us. What's reasonable expectations for Tua year two?
Man, you know, I feel like the Giants are going through this right now where it's like, all right, it's testing time for Daniel Jones. He's finally got some playmakers, even if the offensive line's a question. The Dolphins are getting that already in year two, right? They had Devontae Parker. They added Will Fuller. They had Jalen Waddle. You've got Mike Gesicki. He should be better. And if he's not, it might be time to move on already for the Dolphins. My concern with Tua coming out was, you know, the arm didn't look great as a rookie. I never thought his great arm was great at Alabama, but he just looked a little bit, you know, lower than expected as far as NFL tools go. He can work through progressions and do all this stuff, but he's going to have open receivers now, like he had at Alabama. He's going to have some downfield opportunities. So there's a lot of pressure on Tua, I think, to perform this year. I think he'll be better, but I think he'll probably still underwhelm just a little bit. He does remind me a little bit of Jimmy Garoppolo, where you'll have, you know, he'll spread it around and look pretty good, and then have a couple duds in there in a given game, take a sack he shouldn't, throw a pick that he shouldn't. So he's got to clean up some of that. All I know is Tua will have more opportunities this year than he had last year, and he's got to show that he can be aggressive and make some throws down the field.
Speaking of throws down the field, is it as simple as Jared Goff's got to let it go? Like, the people I talked to with the Rams said, like, look, he wouldn't let it rip. When you guys evaluate what went wrong in L.A., what did Jared Goff not do well?
Yeah, I think there's something to that. We have our big-time throw stat, you know, our highest-graded throws, downfield throws that are just pinpoint, well-timed. And Goff was one of the lowest percentages in the league last year. Back in 2018, when they went to the Super Bowl, he was near the top of the league. So I think with Goff, the Rams just looked and said, we have a really good offense. We have a good offensive mind in Sean McVay. The whole system's really nice. And they just felt like they peaked with Jared Goff. You know, I think, you know, and they said, look, we need somebody where if the perfect play call isn't called, somebody that's going to create outside of structure and just take over with some natural playmaking ability. So they went with Matthew Stafford. So I think there's that element of Jared Goff. And there's really a lot of quarterbacks around the league who are going to be, you know, products of their system. And it's not a knock. It's just the nature of it. You know, there's 10 to 15 quarterbacks who can really only go as far as what you put around them, from play callers to playmakers and all that. And I think the Rams identified, hey, we've hit our ceiling with Jared Goff. Our ceiling may have just been that 2018 Super Bowl run. Let's try to upgrade and go with a guy that could, you know, take us that next step. So they went with Stafford, and I think Goff still has to prove that he could be more than that, and he's going to try to prove it with a much lesser supporting cast in Detroit.
It's Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Okay, what about the Rams? Sean McVay was quoted just raving about his new quarterback. It's just really hard to tell, right? Because all of your guys' analysis is, I mean, you have tons of it on Matt Stafford because he's played a long time in Detroit, but he didn't have a good running game. And, you know, since they lost Calvin Johnson, there wasn't the same superstar wide receiving core. Did have some good players he played with, but, you know, constantly behind in games. How do you do that? Like, I guess that's how's the predictions transfer when you go from an organization that is not necessarily bereft of talent, but definitely in transition the past couple of years, to one that seems to have a lot more supporting talent and better play calling, and they think a better fit in terms of offense?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think when you look at Stafford, if you were just stacking up Stafford in his era, and you go using PFF grades or even just a little intuition, I think it's fair to say in the last 10 years or so, he's quarterback 10, like 11 through 15. He's somewhere in that range. You know, there's a pretty clear-cut top 10 with the Bradys and Breezes and all those guys, right? And so I think Stafford being QB 11 to 15 is probably fair, maybe on the higher end of that. But even going back just from a PFF grade standpoint, he's never graded above 83 in our system, which is good. He's been good these last couple of years. He's never been great. So it's easy to look at Stafford. 3 or 4 games a year, he looks great. I mean, he looks like a Mahomes. He had a no-look pass against Tennessee last year, which if Mahomes did it, it'd be on every highlight reel for the next 50 years. But Stafford did it, and he does that sometimes. He's got the arm talent. He's got all these different things. But it still has never translated into elite production. So now the goal is, well, McVay's probably looking around saying, hey, I did this with Jared Goff. He doesn't have the same tools as Stafford. I'm going to be the guy that will get this out of Stafford. And I think you might get a career year out of Stafford, but it's not like some people think Stafford is Dan Marino. I don't think Dan Marino's coming in here. But you've got a very talented guy who, again, if the play call's not there, Stafford has some natural playmaking ability and arm talent to make something happen. I think that has the ability to elevate this Rams offense, be the best offense under Sean McVay, but it's somewhere in between Jared Goff and Dan Marino is where the expectations need to be set.
Awesome stuff. Steve, really appreciate you joining us. Cannot wait till football season. I know you're geeked up. I got one more to ask you, though. I know in the PFF top 50, and this one's hard, right? Just really hard, because how do you evaluate a Joey Bosa versus Russell Wilson versus Nick Bosa versus Josh Allen? But I noticed you had Russell Wilson at 22, Josh Allen at 40, Dak Prescott at 50. First, let's start with Russell at 22. To many, that feels low because he's a consummate MVP candidate at quarterback. Why 22 for Russell Wilson?
Yeah, it was really, so when we put this list together, we just said position value, we're going to take it out of there because it would be all quarterbacks, of course. But he's the fourth quarterback on our list, and because it'll be fully revealed over these next couple of days. It's Mahomes, Brady, and Rodgers above him. So Wilson is one of the best quarterbacks in the league. But his second half last year, he was the 20th best quarterback in the league. That's the thing that's held him back. I mean, he has played like a top three quarterback for the majority of the last two seasons, last three seasons, really. Wilson just had that huge drop-off last year, so that dropped him a little bit. Guys like Josh Allen, I still want to see one more year from him. What a turn he made last year, but there's still more to see. But Wilson in particular, it was that second half lull, that drop-off that took him from being top 10 on the list.
Awesome stuff. Appreciate you joining us. We'll talk soon. Thanks, Steve.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
Hey, it's Ben, host of The Fifth Hour with Ben Maller, along with my trusty sidekick, David Gascon. Would mean a lot to have you join us on our weekly auditory journey. You're asking, what in God's name is The Fifth Hour? I'll tell you, it's a spinoff of The Ben Maller Show, a cult hit overnights on FSR. Why should you listen? Picture, if you will, a world where we chat with captains of industry in media, sports, and more every week, explore some amazing facts about human nature and more. Listen to The Fifth Hour with Ben Maller on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Every day at this time, we like to get you caught up on the stories of the day. We do so by playing a game.
Game time!
This is game time.
It's game time.
On the Doug Gottlieb Show.
Hustler Turf has the most complete lineup of residential, commercial, zero-turn lawnmowers in the industry, and with over 1,000 dealers across the nation, there's a Hustler Turf dealer near you. Visit HustlerTurf.com. That's HustlerTurf.com. Dan Byer, what's the game?
Doug, it is Wednesday, so that means it is...
Real news, fake news.
All right, a hodgepodge of topics here. Real news or fake news that Packers wide receiver Devontae Adams says the team is, quote, praying, end quote, that Aaron Rodgers comes back to the team.
I'm going to say that's fake news.
They're real, and they're spectacular.
Yeah, Adam spoke with Fox News and said, I back him and I support him, whatever he does. It's just kind of how we get down. We've always had each other's back since I first got here. Like I said, I'm praying that he comes back, but if not, I'll be there and I'll be working. End quote from Devontae Adams.
Okay.
Also said that Jordan Love is has looked good so far, but it's early, and still don't know how he would be in, when live action comes around. So that from Devontae Adams. Real news or fake news, Doug, that Kansas will host Kentucky while Baylor takes on Arkansas in the SEC Big 12 Challenge in college hoops next season?
I know Kansas and Kentucky play each other. I don't know if they host him. I'm going to say real news.
They're real, and they're spectacular.
Yeah, Fog Allen Fieldhouse. You'll get Kansas and Kentucky, and yeah, Baylor and Arkansas playing. I believe that game is in Fayetteville for the, it's Alabama. You know what? I typed that wrong. That's totally my bad. That's a typo on my part. Baylor takes on Alabama because Arkansas takes on West Virginia. So I give you a pass on that one. Yeah, so it was fake news and I didn't even know it and I wrote the stupid thing.
You are fake news.
So Baylor takes on Alabama. That's in Tuscaloosa. Arkansas takes on West Virginia. Some really good matchups was the point of it all. So E me on that one. All right, real news or fake news. NASCAR great Jeff Gordon has signed a new multi-year deal with Fox Sports through 2030.
I'm going to say that's fake news.
You are fake news.
Yeah, in fact, he's going to be leaving the booth at Fox Sports. He's going to become the vice chairman of Hendrick Motorsports. He'll be the number two man behind owner Rick Hendrick.
So he's back in the sport, right? That's the big thing, like back in the sport. That's awesome. Jeff was always good to us here, good to me personally. Just a genuine cool fella, right? Very like quiet and thoughtful. I always felt like in real life.
Yeah, and honestly, if that position comes along, you can't blame him for getting that opportunity. Real news, fake news, Doug. Phillies manager Joe Girardi said he had the umps check Nationals pitcher Max Scherzer for foreign substances because, quote, I saw him going to his hair, and I've never seen him doing that ever, end quote. So that real news or fake news?
Real news.
They're real, and they're spectacular.
That was Girardi's explanation, whether he was doing it to maybe get under Scherzer's skin a little bit, and we know the Nationals didn't take kindly to it. I know you're going to dive into it later, but that's what Joe Girardi said was the reason he had Scherzer checked. Going to his hair. I suppose if he had hair. The nice locks.
Got good lettuce up there.
Finally, Doug, we'll go to the last one here. Real news or fake news? I recorded game two last night, and John Ramos texted me the ending before I was able to watch the game. Is that real news or fake news?
That sounds like real news.
They're real, and they're spectacular.
It was a couple of tweets sent along, and I just looked at my phone, and I just, out of habit, and then said, oh, I guess Paul George is going to miss two free throws late in this game at some point when I get around to watching it. And sure enough, he did. Which, Doug, by the way, made it, then knowing the ending of what happened, made it completely surreal when it was 103-102 with 0.8 of a second. And I'm like, wait a second, the Suns, I think, win this game. And then sure enough, they end up doing so.
That's game, huh?
Game time.
This is game time on the Doug Gottlieb Show.
Yeah. I don't know if your dad was like, my dad was always like, I'm recording the game. So nobody, like, he would walk in, like, announce, I'm recording the game. Don't say anything to me. And sure enough, somebody, like, we'd be walking out of the gym. Hey, wait till you get home and you see what happened in that Laker game, man. Like, oh, what are you doing, man? Sorry, I enjoyed the game. And
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.